أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعلى أهل بيت الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين روحي وأرواح العالمين له الفداء رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي. So brothers and sisters, tonight inshallah we'll be mourning Imam al-Hussein. The connection, the emotional connection towards our Imam, inshallah that's going to happen in the second part of the lecture. In this part of the lecture, we remind ourselves of some practical lessons and ways that we can serve the cause. Inshallah, brothers and sisters, as we go over these verses of the Holy Quran, all of us should be pondering and trying to figure out what it is that we understand from these verses. I will try my best to share some of what we find in the tafasir, but all of us, brothers and sisters, we're all supposed to be reading Quran, pondering over the Quran. There are understandings that come to us when we come to the Quran with a sincere heart. Tonight, inshallah, I want to talk about the period of the life of Nabi Sulaiman before he becomes a king, so his prophet or his childhood. If we were going to divide the life of Nabi Sulaiman up into chapters, one important chapter would be before he becomes a king, before he becomes a ruler, before he's able to establish the kingdom of God on the earth, before he accepts that heavy responsibility. Now, this part of the story is found in several chapters of the Holy Quran, and it's different verses. I'm going to be taking different verses, and if Allah gives tawfiq, I'll be mentioning where we find these verses. Later, brothers and sisters can look at the verses themselves and see what lessons they can derive from this. So what are we looking for? Important lessons from the life of this prophet from his childhood. We're going to start off with Surah An-Naml, so the ants. Surah number 27. Verse number 15. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم ولقد آتينا داود وسليمان علما. God says that surely we granted Dawood and Sulaiman great knowledge. Now if you look at the Arabic here, you don't see that it's ilm, which is azim for instance, but we're translating it as great knowledge. Allama Tabatabai, Radwanullah Ta'ala alayh, he says that when you look at the tanween here, when you look at and you see that the word ilm is in the indefinite sense, that's for tafkheem, to show you how important and how grand that knowledge was. So this was special knowledge, wonderful knowledge that they had. And inshallah, if that's a question might come to mind, okay, well, what knowledge? How vast? What did Allah teach him? Inshallah, in the next verses, we'll try and address that. In the other parts of the speech, inshallah, we'll try and see what it is that God taught him, or part of what it is that God taught him. But God gave Dawood and Sulaiman great knowledge. What else? The second part of the same verse, waqala. This part's very important. Father and son are both speaking now. وَقَالَ الْحَمْدُ لِلَّهِ الَّذِي فَضَّلَنَا عَلَى كَثِيرٍ مِّنْ عِبَادِهِ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ Father and son both say this. This is important. They say, all praise is due to Allah who granted us favor above many of his believing servants. Father and son both say this. What is it that's meant by the favor that Allah granted them? Allama Tabatabai gives two possibilities. He says one of the possibilities is what they're referring to is that knowledge, that special knowledge that Allah had granted them and Allah favored them over many of his believing servants. He says that's one possibility. He says there's another possibility though. The other possibility is that actually what's being referred to are all of those divine gifts that these two prophets were granted. We covered the story of Nabi Dawood before. So if you remember from the discussion on Nabi Dawood, there were certain gifts that he was granted. For instance, one of the things that we learned about that prophet, Nabi Dawood, is that when he would glorify God, when he would do tasbih, the mountains and birds would audibly do tasbih with him. They would glorify God. Imagine that. If we were there at the time, and this is what Iman bil Ghaib is, believing in the unseen, to believe that we could be there and watch and see when that prophet would be glorifying God, and audibly you would hear the mountains and the birds glorifying God with him. What else? There were other gifts that he was granted. He was granted the kingdom. One of the gifts that he had, just one of the gifts that he had, was that iron in the hands of Dawood, it was like wax, cold iron. Not molten iron, but just regular iron that he could mold it just like it was wax. It was malleable in his hands. So those gifts, that was for Nabi Dawood, alayhi salam. What about Nabi Sulaiman? Inshallah, we'll cover some of those gifts later. Like having the jinn under his control. The wind under his control. For him, copper. It's interesting. For him, copper was also malleable. It was like wax in his hand. Cold. It was like that. So he had these different gifts. And perhaps that's what's being referred to here. That gift that we've been granted, which is different and better than many of Allah's believing servants, were some of those gifts. That's one possibility. Now, what happens is, Nabi Dawood appointed Sulaiman at the command of God. Because we believe, as Muslims, only Allah has the right to rule his subjects. Allah is the one who decides. Allah is the one who appoints. Allah appointed Nabi Sulaiman at the command of God to be after him when he was only 13. Only 13, based on reliable ahadith. Now, what happens was, naturally, we all know what it's like to have a nafs, to have an ego. And it's very difficult for some to accept a wali. Even if that person is more qualified than them, we all would like to. We'd all like to be God if we could, to play God, to rule. So what happens is the elders amongst Bani Israel, they didn't like that. When they heard that this 13-year-old, he's going to be the ruler, the noise started. Why him? Why are you appointing your son? So what happens is that this is now from the childhood of Nabi Sulaiman, one of the things that Dawood did, alayhi salam, was to show them miraculously that actually Sulaiman has been chosen by God. He told the elders, he said, I want all of you to bring your staffs, right? A staff, a stick. All of you, bring your staffs and put it in a room. Lock the room and guard the room. Write your names on it. Bring your staffs. He says that the staff which miraculously blooms, that's going to show who God has appointed as a ruler. Nabi Sulaiman also brings his staff. He puts it there. And then when the elders are guarding it, the next day they see that when they open the door, his staff is the one that miraculously is blooming. So a sign of God. However, it didn't stop there. Meaning again and again, Allah wanted to show to the people and demonstrate to the people that Sulaiman is more qualified. On the day of judgment, no one should have an excuse. Why is it that you didn't accept Sulaiman as your wali? There should be no excuse. Should be no excuse. So what happens is that Allah used other occasions to demonstrate that Nabi Sulaiman is more qualified. He's not even king yet. He's still young. I want to give you another example. This next example is from Surah Anbiya. Like I told, brothers and sisters, this part of the story is found in different places in the Holy Quran. So this one now, Surah 21. Verses number 78 and 79. Allah is going to tell us a story. And in this story, Allah will demonstrate the superiority of this prophet. So let me read the Arabic of the verse. Brothers and sisters can follow along if they have the Quran on their phones. So verse number 21. Wa Dawooda wa Sulaiman. It starts off in this way. And remember Dawood and Sulaiman. إِذْ يَحْكُمَانِ فِي الْحَرْثِ when they gave the ruling, gave the judgment in the tillage. I'm going to explain what that means.
إِذْ نَفَشَتْ فِيهِ غَنَمُ الْقَوْمِ.
There were some sheep, and they went into that tillage.
وَكُنَّا لِحُكْمِهِمْ شَاهِدِينَ.
And we were witnesses to their rule, to their judgment. So what happened? Actually, the sheep strayed into somebody else's tillage. Let's explain a little bit about this story. God using this as another example of why Suleiman is superior. The command of Allah, Dawood, demonstrate why he's superior. So what happens? There was a rule in Bani Israel concerning farmers and shepherds. The story, there was a farmer who was a grape farmer. He had a vineyard. And what happened was that those sheep, they strayed into his area and they ate his fruit. They ate the grapes. He came to Nabi Dawood and he complained. What's the complaint? The sheep strayed in there and they've eaten my fruits. Why is that a problem? What's the issue? Actually, what happened was there was a law. And all of the Anbiya, all of the prophets before Nabi Sulaiman had ruled according to that law. The rule is this. During the day, farmers are responsible to protect their crops. At night, shepherds are responsible to make sure that their sheep don't stray in to the crops and they don't take the people's crops. What happens is, if the shepherds are negligent in their duty and the sheep stray into the land and then they go and they take the crops, afterwards, enough sheep are to be given to that farmer to make up for what he's lost. So he goes over to the prophet and he explains that this is the situation. And the prophet says, Nabi Dawood, instead of me deciding, I want my son Suleiman to decide. The next verse, so verse number 79.
فَفَهَمْنَاهَا سُلَيْمَانَ.
We inspired Suleiman to understand the ruling.
وَكُلًّا آتَيْنَا حُكْمًا وَعِلْمًا.
Both of them, we gave hukm, we gave the judgment and knowledge, we gave it to both of them, but we made Suleiman understand this ruling. So what happened? Suleiman came in and he listened to both sides, the plaintiff and also the shepherd. The shepherd admitted his guilt. It's true, my sheep, they went in and they strayed into this area and they ate this guy's grapes. Now, what happened was that Suleiman made a different ruling than all of the previous Anbiya. What did he decide? He said that actually, instead of you giving the sheep, you're not going to give the sheep. I want you to give the lambs of the sheep, the wool, the fur, the milk. These things I want you to give it to the farmer, but not the sheep themselves. Very different from all of the previous Anbiya. The question is why? He says the difference is this. Those sheep who would stray normally into that area and eat the fruits, normally they would destroy the crops completely. So for instance, if it was vines, they would not only eat the fruit, they would eat the vines and the crop would be destroyed. That farmer would be ruined. But what happened? What was different in this case? He says, in this case, no. What happened was that the sheep came in, but they only ate the grapes. The vines are still there. So this time I want you to give, to make up for it, you give the products of those sheep, but not the sheep themselves. So this was one other opportunity of demonstrating that he was superior. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Now, we're going to end up, this story is going to get cut off a little bit, but inshallah we'll address it the rest at another time. Remember I said that this is one important lesson. There are other important lessons. We have 10 minutes. No, okay. Alhamdulillah. I'm not going to get in trouble, inshallah. One important lesson. If we look back to verse number 27 and surah number 27, verse number 15, I said that the father and son both say these words, and this is important.
Qala.
Both of them said, قال الحمد لله الذي فضلنا على كثير من عباده المؤمنين. All praise is due to Allah. Father and son are saying this. All praise is due to Allah, who has given us an advantage of favor over many of his believing servants. Father and son are saying this. Now, why is this significant? One of the beautiful things is to have a righteous child who's on the right path. Father and son are both saying this. The same gratitude towards Allah, the same seeing all of their tawfiq as being from Allah. Father and son are both saying this. Now the question that you and I want to ask, and this is now because we're talking about strategy. And one of the things I love about this majlis, meaning about this session that we have here, it gives me good memories even when I go, is to see how many young people I see in this crowd. Young people. A blessing of God. Right? I want to talk a little bit about that. So what happens is that we see father and son, young man, old man, both of them the exact same belief in God, the exact same contributions, same love of God, spirit of sacrifice. Both of them are saying the exact same thing. The question is this: how do we end up with righteous children? He had a son who was perfect, who was doing everything like him, both of them believing in God, everything about Allah. But the question is, for strategy now, how do we end up with righteous children who are also serving the cause? So that wasn't just that we have managed to maintain our own faith, but rather the next generation and generations after us until the coming of the Mahdi, and we hope that it's soon, they end up being Muslims, staying Muslims. How can we do that? What is it that we can learn from the Ahlul Bayt, from their students in this path? Because we see that Imam Hussein alayhi salam, for instance, he had a son like Ali Akbar. Our goal, the goal of all of us when we train our children, is not just to have our children make a lot of money, get a good education, have a better and more comfortable life than we had. That's not what we're looking for. We're looking for, first of all, God. Secondly, the Imam. And the idea of sacrificing ourselves for the Imam. Alhamdulillah, the brothers mentioned there's a food drive. That's wonderful. Brothers, sisters contributing, letting others see the goodness of Islam. Brothers mentioned the idea of contributing financially. That's also wonderful. But brothers and sisters, you and I, when we listen to these masa'ib, when we hear these and shed tears for Imam Hussein, we're looking for the opportunity to sacrifice ourselves for our Imam. More than that, what did we learn from Imam Hussein? He didn't just go out to face that army of 30,000 people by himself. He brought his wives, his children, women, to go over there to face that army. That's what we're looking for. How can we create a situation where we're ready to sacrifice? Not only us, the next generation, our children, to raise children like Ali Akbar, or for instance, Qasim. You remember the story of Qasim? Qasim, we learn from the Masa'ib, he wasn't even baligh. He wasn't even baligh. How did he make the right decision when grown men failed? What did Qasim decide? We remember the story that when they were gathered in the tent and the Imam said, that take the night as a steed, take the night as a camel, run. They only want me. The men said, no, we're going to stand and fight. Qasim was one of those who also... See, when the Imam saw that, he said that you're all going to become shaheed. Qasim asked, he said, am I going to be among those killed? And the Imam said, yes, you'll make it. But first he asked him, how do you see death? And Qasim said, ahla min al-asal, sweeter than honey. He's not even baligh. How do we raise a nephew like that? A child like Ali Akbar? That's what we want to solve, inshallah, when we're going to talk about tonight. So, we'll start with the idea of having righteous children. Having righteous children. Sometimes when I give a speech like this, I know that sometimes there'll be pushback. Sometimes when you say things that aren't necessarily what the West is saying. Because as I mentioned before, with secular Islam, there's some things that they're perfectly fine with. There's other parts of Islam that they don't like. Now what happens is sometimes when you and I, we want to push and promote for true Islam, the Islam of Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, there's pushback. So now, One of the things we need to talk about before we even get to the idea of how to raise children properly is the idea of having righteous children and this being of value. When God talks about the favors that he granted Dawood, I covered this verse the other day. Surah 38, verse number 30 says, وَوَهَبْنَا لِدَاوُودَ سُلَيْمَانَ. We granted Dawood Sulaiman. A favor of God is to have a righteous child. In our hadith, we're told that if you have a righteous child, brothers and sisters, there's many times we compare ourselves with others. We see that other people were more successful in a certain way. We don't have certain things, things that we wanted, dreams that we pushed for. We don't get them. But sometimes we don't count our blessings. Do I have a child who says, La ilaha illallah, who's chosen Imam Hussein? That's a blessing. The hadith says that if you have a righteous child, this is one of the flowers of paradise. One of the flowers of paradise. Now, I want to talk about the spiritual rewards of having a righteous child. This might sound a little bit selfish, okay? So if you're going to feel it selfish, plug your ears, okay? Sound a little bit selfish. Brothers and sisters, one day you're going to die. Huh? Yes or no? One day, we're going to die. Can't live, 100 years, 200 years. Eventually, you go. What happens is, when you die, your chance for doing good deeds finishes. Your opportunity for doing good is over. But there's a way to keep getting good deeds. If you have a righteous child, or more than one righteous child, this might be the means of you going to paradise. Hadith. They said once that Isa alayhi salam was passing by a grave. He sees that the person in this grave is suffering from adab, adab of the qabr, getting tortured inside the grave. He passes by next year, same grave, he sees the person's not being tortured. Ya Allah, why is this the situation? What happens is that this person had a righteous child. That child became baligh, did an act of good, an act for humanity. Because of that, the adab was lifted from the person in the qabr. So we should have a righteous child. Now, pushback. How many children should we have? Should we have one? Remember in China at one time they were only allowing people to have one child? Should we just have one? Spoil them, make sure they have a good life. Don't have too many. Make sure you provide them with a good life. What does Islam say? Hadith. Tanakahu wa tanasalu. Marry and beget offspring. Fa inni ubahi bikum al umam yawm al qiyamah. On the day of judgment, I'm going to boast over the other nations because of how many kids you have. Walau bisiqt. Even if you had a child that was stillborn, the Prophet says, I'm going to be proud of you. The more children, the better. The ulama say, now this is time for pushback. And sisters, if anybody is willing to get angry at me, there's security. On the other side, I'm going to make it out safe, inshallah. The ulama tell us, at least have four. At least. More than that. See, I'm going to really get myself in trouble. Brothers shouldn't have told me, brother's running late. You don't want your children to be raised too far apart. For instance, they tell us, try not to raise your kids so that they're more than 3.5 years apart. Why, though? Why? Now, a little bit of tough love. Tough love. Brothers and sisters, remember I mentioned before that eventually you die? Before you die, you get old. Right? You get old. When you get old, brothers and sisters, according to Islam, your children are your insurance policy. It's wajib for your children to support you when you get old. Now think about this. If you have, let's say, one dutiful son, one dutiful daughter, think about it practically. This person's also married, wife and children, taking care of a house, right? They're taking care of their responsibilities. How difficult is it to support elderly parents? I'm just going to be real with you guys. It's not easy to support elderly parents. It's something you want brothers and sisters for. It's still your responsibility. But if it's something which is a shared responsibility,
then not only if you're careful about it, if you're good about it, your kids will be fighting to take care of you. When do I get a little bit of time to spend with mom or dad? Because you have more than one brothers and sisters. But otherwise, for that one person, God forbid, and some of you are young, so I'm telling you this, reminder to myself, and you never, brothers and sisters, you never want to do this, that sometimes when we're taking care of our parents, we let them know they're a burden. Nastajiru billah. There's some kids who, right? They'll make a statement because it's so difficult. What's the better way to do it? The better way to do it is follow the advice of the Prophet. To have many children, that burden becomes shared. It's easy to do. People are competing. Who can have mom this week? Who can help out? Right? It's something that you want to do. So we definitely want to have more than one child. We want to have them. Why close in age? Brothers and sisters, the best person to be a playmate for our children or other children. If we wait and have our children too far apart, each child grows up as a single child, an only child. They don't have anybody to play with. You see, there's a role for brothers and sisters. You need somebody to slap you upside the head a little bit, to argue with you sometimes. Your brothers and sisters, they're your playmates. They talk to you. You can confide in them. They can defend you. The best playmate is someone who's also a child. So, having these children, having more than one, is actually a very good thing. Now, the next thing we learn now from the story of Nabi Sulaiman. So, what's our point? The idea of having righteous children. Having children who believe in God. Father and son saying the same thing. Mother and daughter believing in the same cause. Pushing one another towards God. Great blessing from Allah. How? When we look at the story of Nabi Sulaiman, and I'm going to quote another verse of the Holy Quran. We see that actually both parents, from an Islamic point of view, have a great responsibility in doing tarbiyah of the children, especially the mother. Especially the mother. Where in the Holy Quran do we find reference to the mother of Nabi Sulaiman? This is again Surah An-Naml, so it's verse number 19. If for those of you, and many of you are familiar with the story, you remember that prophet, Nabi Sulaiman, walking and then meeting with one of the, or having a conversation with an ant. It's part of the story of Nabi Sulaiman. He has a conversation with an ant. When he has a conversation with the inshallah, next time. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.